Shahnameh, The Book of Kings. By Ferdowsi. Pseudonym of Abulkasim Manr. Abridged translation by Helen Zimmern. Continues. Firoud. But a little while had Kaikos Rau sat upon the throne of Iran, yet the world resounded with his fame, and all men bear upon their lips the praises of his wisdom. He cleansed the earth of the rust of care, and the power of Afrasiab was chained up. And men from all parts of the earth came forth to do homage before him, and Rustam also, and Zul the aged, did obeisance at his footstool. And there came with them an army that made the plains black like to ebony, and the sounds of their war trumpets made the heart to tremble. Then Kaikeus made ready a great feast to do honor to his Pahlava. And when they were seated thereat his mouth ran over with praises of Siawash, and he lamented the evil that he had done, and he poured maledictions upon the head of Afrasiab. And he spake unto Kaikos Rau his son, and said, I demand of thee that thou swear before me a great oath, and that thou keep it carefully. Swear unto me that thy heart shall be ever filled with hatred of Afrasiab, and that thou wilt not let this flame be quenched by the waters of forgetfulness, and that thou regard him not as the father of thy mother, and that thou think only of Siawash thy sire, whom he hath slain. And swear unto me further that there shall be no other mediator between you save only the sword and the mace. Then Kaikos Rau turned him towards the fire and swore the oath demanded of his sire, and he vowed to keep it in the name of God the Most High. And Kaikeus caused the oath to be written on a royal scroll, and he confided it to the care of Rustam his Pahlava. And when it was done they feasted 7 days without ceasing, but on the 8th Kaikos Rau mounted his throne. Then he called about him his nobles, and he said unto them that the time was ripe to avenge the death of his father, and he bade them make ready their armies, and he told them how on a certain day they should lead them out before him. Now when the day was come Kaikos Rau descended into the plains to receive them. And he was seated upon an elephant of war, and on his head he wore the crown of might, and about his neck the chain of supremacy, and in his hand he bare a mace of might, and on his arms were bracelets of great worth, and precious stones were strewn about his garments. Now when he was come into the midst of the camp he threw a ball of silver into a cup of gold. And when the army heard the sound thereof they knew it to be the signal, and they arose and passed before the Shah. And the first to come forth was the army of Friberts. And Friberts was seated upon a horse of saffron hue, and he wore shoes of gold upon his feet, and in his hands were a sword and a mace, and around his saddle was rolled a cord of might, and over his head floated a banner the color of the sun. And Kaikos Rau, when he saw him, invoked blessings upon his head. And there came after Friberts Gudars the wise in council, and behind him was borne a standard whereon was broidered a lion. And at his right hand and his left marched his mighty sons, and a brave army followed after them. And they did homage before the Shah, and Kaikos Rau regarded them kindly. Then there came after them yet many other noble knights, eager for battle as a bull whom no man hath put to flight, and the sounds of cymbals and the bells of war elephants filled the air, and lances and targets gleamed in the sun, and banners of many hues streamed upon the breeze. And Kaikos Rau blessed his heroes every one. Then he caused his treasurer to bring forth rich gifts of gold and jewels and slaves, and brocades of rum, and cloth of gold, and skins of beaver. And they placed them before him, and he divided them into portions, and he said they should be owned of those who should do feats of valor in the war against Afrasiab. Then he bade them to a great feast, and they made merry in the house of the Shah. But when the sun had unsheathed its sword of light and the somber night was fled in fear, Kaikos Rau commanded that the trumpets of departure sound. Then the army came before the Shah, and he gave into the keeping of Tus the standard of Kawa, and he bade him lead forth the hosts. And he said unto Tus, Be obedient unto my will and lead mine army aright. I desire of thee that thou avenge the death of my father, but I desire also that thou molest none but those that fight. Have mercy upon the laborer and spare the helpless. And furthermore, I charge thee that thou pass not through the land of Kalat, but that thou leave it on one side and take thy course through the desert. For in Kalat abideth Firoud my brother, who was born of the daughter of Purin, and he dwelleth in happiness, and I would not that sorrow come nigh unto him. And he knoweth no man in Iran, not even by name, and unto no man hath he done hurt, and I desire that no harm come to him. And Tus said, I will remember thy will and take the road that thou commandest. Then the army set forth towards Turin, and they marched many days until they came to a spot where the roads parted. And the one led unto the desert, arid and devoid of water, and the other led unto Kalat. Now when they were come to the parting of the roads, the army halted until Tus should have told unto them which road they should follow. And when Tus came up, he said unto Gudars, the desert is void of water, and what shall we do deprived thereof, for the army sore needeth refreshment after its march of weariness? It is better, therefore, that we should take the road that ledeth to Kalat, and abide there a while that our men may be rested. And Gudars said, the king hath set thee at the head of his army, but I counsel thee choose the path that he hath named, lest sorrow come upon thee. But Tus laughed, and said, O noble hero, disquiet not thyself, for what I do is pleasing in the sight of the king. Then he commanded the army that they march into Kalat, and he remembered not the desires of Kai Khosrau. Now when Firoud saw that the sky was darkened with dust from the feet of dromedaries and elephants of battle, he called before him Tokari his counselor, and questioned him concerning these things. And Tokari said, O young man, thou knowest not what is come to pass. This army pertaineth unto thy brother, and he hath sent it forth into Turin that the death of thy father be avenged, and it mark hate right upon Kalat, and I know not where the battle may take place. Now Firoud, who was void of experience, was troubled when he learned this, and he made safe his castle that was upon a high hill, and he gathered in his flocks. Then he seated himself upon the ramparts and looked down over the sea of armor that approached him. And when he had done so, he went in before his mother, who had never ceased from weeping for Siawish her spouse. And he told her what was come about, and he asked of her how he should act. Then she said unto him, Listen, O my son, I there is a new Shah in Iran, and he is brother unto thee, for ye are sprung from one father. Now, since thy brother sendeth forth an host to avenge his murder, it beseemeth thee not to remain aloof, but rather shouldst thou serve as vanguard unto the host. Wherefore call together thy knights, and then go forth and seek out the leader of this host, and make thyself known to him. For it behoveth not a stranger to reap this glory or usurp the place that is due unto thy rank. Then Firoud said, Who shall be my stay in battle among the heroes who carry high their heads? And his mother said, Seek out Bahram, for he was a friend unto thy father. And listen also to the words of Tokari, and go not out at once with thine army until thou hast made thyself known unto the men of Iran. Then Firoud said, O my mother, I will faithfully observe thy counsel. And he went forth unto a high place on the mountain, and he took with him Tokari, and they looked down upon the mighty army that was spread at their feet. Then Firoud questioned of the warriors, and Tokari answered him according to his knowledge. And he counted up the standards of the heroes, and he made Firoud acquainted with the names of might in Iran. Now, while they were so doing, Tus beheld them upon the heights, and he was angered at the sight of them, and said, Let a wary knight go forth unto those two seated aloft, and search out what manner of men they be. And if they be of the army, let them be lashed 200 times about the head, but if they be Turks and spies, bind them, and bring them before me that I may destroy them. Then Bahram, the son of Gudars, said, I will search into this matter. And he rode forth towards the mountain. Now Firoud, beholding him, said unto Tokari, Who is he that cometh out with so haughty an air? By his bearing it would seem that he holdeth me of light esteem, and that he would mount hither by force. Then Tokari said, O prince, be not angered thus easily. I know not his name, but I seem to behold the device of Gudars, and perchance this is one of his sons. Now Bahram, when he had neared the summit, lifted up his voice, that was like unto thunder, and cried, saying, Who art thou that seatest thyself upon the heights and lookest down upon the army? Fearest thou not Tus the Pahlava? Then Firoud answered and said, Speak not unto me thus haughtily, for I have given thee no cause. Thinkest thou, perchance, that I am but a wild ass of the desert, and that thou art a lion, great of might? It behoveth a man of sense to put a bridle on his tongue. For I say unto thee, that thou art in no wise my better, neither in courage nor in might. Look upon me, and judge whether I have not head and heart and brain, and when thou shalt have seen that I possess them, threaten me not with empty words. I counsel this unto thee in friendship. And if thou wilt listen to reason, I will put some questions unto thee. Then Bahram replied, Speak, thou art in the sky, and I am on the ground. Then Firoud asked of him who were the chiefs of this army, and wherefore they were come forth. And Bahram named unto him the names of might. Then Firoud said unto him, Why hast thou not spoken the name of Bahram? There is none among all the host of Iran that mine eyes would rather look upon. Then Bahram said, O youth, say unto me who hath spoken unto thee thus of Bahram, and who hath made thee acquainted with Gudars and Jug. Then Firoud said, My mother hath made them known unto me, and she bade me seek out Bahram from among this host, because that he was foster brother unto my father. Then Bahram spake, and said, Verily thou art Firoud, of the seed of Siawash. And Firoud answered, Thou hast said, I am a branch of the cypress that was struck down. Then Bahram said, Uncover thine arm, that I may behold the mark of the Kayanides. And Firoud did so, and Bahram beheld the mark. Then he knew that Firoud was of the race of Kai Kobad, and he did homage before him, and he drew nigh unto him on the mountain. Then Firoud laid bare before Bahram his desires, and he said how that he would make a great feast unto the army in his house, and how, when this was done, he desired to take the lead and march with it into Turin, and he craved Bahram to bear his words of greeting unto Tus. And Bahram said, O prince, brave and young, I will bear thy message unto Tus, and I will implore of him that he listen to thy voice. Yet because he is a man easily angered, I fear the answer he may return. For though he be valiant, yet is he also vain, and he cannot forget that he is sprung from the race of the Kayanides, and he deemeth ever that the first place pertaineth unto him. Then Bahram told Firoud wherefore he had been sent forth by Tus, and he departed from him, saying, If Tus hearken unto my voice, I will return unto thee, but if thou beholdest another, confide not thyself to him. Then he departed, and came before Tus, and related to him all that he had heard. And Tus was beside himself with anger, and he cried out against this young man, and questioned wherefore he would usurp his place. And he upbraided Bahram for that which he had done, and he refused to give credit unto his words, and he sware that he would cause this youth to perish. And he called upon his warriors, and bade them go forth and sever the head of this Turk. But Bahram said unto them, Ye know not that he sendeth you forth against Firoud, who is brother unto Kai Khosrau, and sprung from the seed of Siawash. I counsel you have the fear of the Shah before your eyes, and lift not your hands in injustice against his brother. When the warriors heard these words, they retreated back into the tents. But Tus was angered exceedingly, and he commanded yet again that one should go forth to do his behests. Then Rivnaz, who was husband unto the daughter of Tus, said that he would do his desires. So he rode forth unto the mountain. Now when Firoud beheld a horseman, who brandished aloft his sword in enmity, he said unto Tokari, Tus despiseth my words, and since Bahram cometh not back, my heart is disquieted. Look, I pray thee, if thou canst tell unto me what noble this may be. And Tokari said, It is Rivnaz, a knight of great cunning, son unto Tus, whose daughter he hath in marriage. Then Firoud asked, saying, Since he attacketh me, whom shall I slay, the steed or its rider? And Tokari said, Direct thine arms against the man, then perchance, when Tus shall learn of his death, he will repent him that he listened not unto thy words of peace. So Firoud bent his bow and shot Rivnaz through the breast. And he fell dead from off his saddle, and his horse turned him back in terror unto the camp. Now when Tus beheld the horse that was come back without its rider, he knew what was come to pass, and his anger against Phirouz burned yet the more. So he called unto him Zerisp his son, and bade him go forth and avenge the blood of Ribnus. And when Phirouz saw him approach, he asked yet again the name of his foe, and he prepared his bow, that Tus might learn that he was a man that should not be treated with dishonor. And when Zerisp would have fought with him, he pinned him dead unto his saddle. And the horse sped back with him into the camp, so that Tus saw that which was come about. Then his fury knew no limit, and he sprang upon his charger, and he set forth himself against Phirouz. Now when Tokari beheld it, he said unto Phirouz, Tus himself is come forth to combat thee, and thou canst not stand against this crocodile. Retreat, therefore, I counsel thee, into thy castle, and let us await the decrees of the stars. But Phirouz answered in anger, Who is Tus, that I should fear him? I will not flee from his presence. Then Tokari said, If thou be resolved to do battle with this lion, I counsel thee that thou destroy him not, lest thy brother be angered if the leader of his host perish by thy hand. Moreover, the army will come forth to avenge him, and how canst thou stand against an host? Direct thine arrows, therefore, against his charger, for a prince fighteth not on foot. If, therefore, thou kill his horse from under him, thou wilt have shown unto him thy skill. Then Phirouz did as Tokari counseled, and the arrow was faithful to its aim, and he shot the horse of Tus from under him, and laid the charger low upon the ground. And Tus had to turn him back on foot unto his camp, and rage against Phirouz burned in his spirit. And the nobles, when they beheld their Pallava treated thus with contempt, were angry also, and just said, Who is this young man, that he despiseth an army, and how may he treat us with disdain? Though he be of the race of the Chionides, and of the seed of Kaikobad, he hath opened a door, and knoweth not whither it leadeth. And as he spake he girded his armor about him, and made him ready to go out against Phirouz. Now when Phirouz beheld him he sighed, and said, This army is valiant, but it cannot distinguish good from evil. I fear me that by them will Siawish not be avenged, for their leader is devoid of sense. Else could he not persist in enmity against me. Tell me now, I pray, who this new foe may be. Then Tokari said, It is Jug, the son of Gudars, a knight of great renown, before whom even the lion trembleth unto his marrow. And he led forth thy brother into Iran, and he is girt with the armor of Siawish, that no man can pierce with an arrow. Direct thy bow, therefore, yet again unto the charger, or thy strife will be vain. And Phirouz the brave did as Tokari said, and he sent forth his arrow, and the horse of Jug sank unto the earth. Now all the nobles rejoiced when Jug returned unto them in safety, but Bazan, his son, was wroth, and he upbraided his father, and he said, O thou who fearest not an army, how canst thou turn thee back before a single knight? Then he sware a great oath that he would not quit the saddle until the blood of Ribnus and of Zerisp should be avenged. Now Jug was afraid for his son, who was young, and would have restrained him. But Bazan suffered it not, and when his father saw that he was resolved, he gave unto him the armor of Siawash, and sent him forth unto the mountain. Now when Phirouz saw that yet another was come out against him, he questioned Tokari again of his name. And Tokari said, It is a youth who hath not his like in Iran. Bazan is he called, and he is only son unto Jug the brave. And because that he is clad in the armor of Siawash, thy father, strike at his horse, or thy bow will avail thee not. So Phirouz shot his arrows at the horse, and he laid it low, as he had done the others. Then Bazan cried, saying, O young man, who amayest thus surely, thou shalt behold how warriors fight on foot. And he ran up the side of the mountain, that he might come near unto Phirouz. But Phirouz turned and entered in upon his gates, and he rained down stones from his walls upon the head of his adversary. Then Bazan taunted him, and said, O hero of renown, thou fliest before a man on foot, thou who art brave. Alas! Whither is vanished thy courage? Then he returned unto the camp, and told unto Tus how that the scion of the Chionides was filled with valor, and how his bow was sure, and he said that he feared no man could stand against him. But Tus said, I will raise unto the dust his castle, I will destroy this Turk, and avenge the blood that he hath spilled. Now when the brilliant sun was vanished and the black night had invaded the earth with her army of stars, Firoud caused his castle to be strengthened. And while he did so, his mother dreamed a dream of evil portent, and she came forth weeping before her son. And she spake, saying, O my son, the stars are evil disposed towards us, and I am afraid for thee. Then Firoud answered her, saying, Woe unto thee, my mother, for I know it is not given unto thee to cease from shedding tears of sorrow. For verily I shall perish like unto my father, in the flower of my youth. Yet will I not crave mercy of these Iranians. And he bade her go back unto the chamber of the women, and pray God for his soul. Now when the sun returned and lifted his glorious face above the vault of heaven, there was heard the sound of armor on all sides, and Firoud beheld that the host of Iran was come forth against him. So he went out beyond the gates, leading his warriors. And since there was no plain whereon they could give battle, they fought upon the mountainside, and many were the Turkish heads that were felled. But Firoud made great havoc among his enemies, and they beheld that he was a lion in the fight. But the stars of the young hero were waning, for even a brave man cannot contend alone against an host. For when he would have ridden back unto his castle, Raham and Bazun lay in ambush against him, and they closed unto him the two ends of the path. But Firoud was not dismayed thereat. He fell upon the son of Jug, and would have slain him, but Raham came upon him from behind, and struck him down with a mighty club. Then Firoud knew that his hour was come, and he returned unto his mother. Now when she saw him she raised a great cry, but he bade her keep silence, and he spake, saying, Weep not, for the time suffereth it not. For the Iranians follow fast upon me, and they will enter and take this house, and do violence unto thee and to thy women. Go out, therefore, and cast you from off the walls into the abyss, that death may come upon you, and that Bazun when he entereth find none alive. As for me, my moments are but few, for the heroes of Iran have murdered the days of my youth. And the women did as he commanded, save only his mother, who abode beside him until the breath was gone out from his body. Then she made a great fire, and threw therein all his treasures, and she went out into the stables and laid low the horses that were therein. And when she had made the place a desert unto the Iranians, she returned unto the feet of her son, and pierced her body with a sword. Now when the Iranians had broken down the bars of the gates and entered into the castle, they came unto the chamber and beheld the bodies of Firoud and of his mother. And when they saw them, they could not withhold their tears, and they sorrowed for the anger of Tus, and the fear of Kaikos Rau came upon them. And Gudar said unto Tus, Thou hast sown hatred, and thou wilt reap war. It beseemeth not a leader to be quick to ire. Thy haste hath brought to death a youth of the race of the Chionides, and hath caused the blood of thy sons to be spilled. When Tus heard these words he wept in his sorrow, and said, Evil fortune is come upon me. Then he caused a royal tomb to be made, and seated Firoud therein upon a throne of gold, and he decked him with all the signs of kingship. And when he had so done he returned with his army unto the plains, and 3 days they halted in their grief. But on the fourth the trumpets were sounded for departure, and Tus led forth the army towards Turin. Now when Afrasiab learned that a host was come forth against him from out of Iran, he bade Purin make ready his army. For he said, Kaikos Rau hath unveiled unto us the secrets of his heart, and we know now that forgiveness is not hidden in his soul. Now while they made them in order, there came a great storm of snow that covered the earth like to a carpet, and the water became hard, and for many days no man beheld the earth or the sun. And food was lacking unto the Iranians, and they were fain to devour their steeds of battle. And when at last the sun came back, the earth was changed into a lake, and the Iranians suffered yet again. Then Tus said, Let us return whence we came forth. But his army said, not so. Shall we flee before the face of Afrasiab? So they made them ready to meet their foes. And they fought right valiantly, and many were the heads of Turan that were laid in the dust by their hands, and the victory inclined towards them. Then Tus was glad, and made a great feast and invited thereto his warriors. And he darkened their heads with wine, so that they laid aside their armor, neither did they set watches in the camp. Now Perun, when he learned of this, saw that the time served him, and when the night was fallen he went out against the camp of Iran. And all the nobles were drunk save only Gudars the wise. Now when he heard that the Turanians were come into the camp, he ran to the tents of Tus and cried, saying, "Is this the hour to hold the wine cup?" Then he called together his sons, and he set his army in order, but the Turanians routed them utterly, for the men of Iran were heavy with wine, and they knew not whither they sent their blows. And the carnage was great, and when the sun had brought back the day the ground was strewn thick with the bodies of the Iranians. And cries of agony were heard around, and there were none to heal the hurts, for those that were whole were captive. And Tus was beside himself for sorrow, and Gudars alone was not defraught of reason. So the old man sent forth a messenger to bear the tidings of woe unto the Shah. Now he was a messenger that made the earth disappear beneath his feet, and speedily did he stand within the courts of the king. And Kai Khosrau, when he had listened to his words, was angered, and his tongue called down curses on the head of Tus. Then he pondered all night how he should act, but when the cock crew he wrote a letter unto Friberts the son of Kaikeus. And he bade him take unto him the flag of Kawat and the golden boots, and lead the army in the place of Tus. And he bade him in all things be obedient to the counsels of Gudars the wise, and he recalled how Tus had disobeyed his commandments, and he said, "I know no longer who is my friend or my foe." Then he put his seal to the letter and gave it unto the messenger. And the man sped forth and brought it into the camp. Then Friberts read it out before the army. And when he had heard it, Tus did that which the Shah desired, and when he had given over unto Friberts the command, he turned him to go back unto Iran. Now when he was come before Kai Khosrau, he fell upon the earth before his throne, and the Shah raised him not, neither did he give him words of greeting. And when he parted his lips, it was to let forth words of anger. And he made known to him his sore displeasure, and he reproached him with the death of Firoud, and he said, "But that thou art sprung from Minukir, and that thy beard is white, I would sever thy head from off thy body for this deed. Yet, as it is, a dungeon shall be thy dwelling, and thine evil nature thy jailer." And when he had thus spoken, he drove him from his presence, and gave orders that he should be put into chains. Now while these things passed in Iran, Friberts craved of Perun that he would grant unto him a truce. And Perun said, "It is ye who have broken into our land, yet I will listen unto your desires and grant unto you this truce, and it shall be of the length of one moon. But I counsel unto you that ye quit the land of Turan in its course." But Friberts would not lead back the army thus discomfited, and he spent the time accorded to him in preparation, and when it was at an end he offered battle again to the Turanians. And there was waged a combat s sun hath not looked upon its like, and the army of the Iranians was overthrown. And the slaughter was terrible, neither did the men of Turan escape, and many were the great ones of the land that perished. And the men of Iran fought till that their strength was departed. They had sought the conflict and found defeat. And they that were not slain fled from the battlefield, and it is they that saved their lives in this manner whom thou must bewail. Now when another day was risen upon the world, Perun sent for his guards to bring him news of the Iranians. And when they told him that their tents were vanished from off the plains, he sent the news of victory to Afrasiab. And the king rejoiced thereat, and all the land prepared a great feast unto the army. And when Perun entered into the city, the terraces thereof were decked with carpets of gay hue, and the houses were clothed with arras of rhum, and pieces of silver rained down upon the warriors. And the king poured upon Perun gifts of such number that you would not have patience to hear me recount them. And he sent him back unto Khotan with much honor and many counsels. And he said, "Let not thine army slumber, and trust not thy foe because he is drawn back. I charge thee, keep thine eyes fixed upon the land of Rustam, for if thy vigilance slumber, he will surely come forth and destroy thee, for he alone is to be feared of the men of Iran. Therefore be brave and watchful, and may heaven preserve thee unto my throne. And Purin listened unto the words spoken of Afrasiab, as it beseemed him. And when he was returned unto his kingdom, he set watchers upon all sides, that they might acquaint him concerning Rustam the Pahlava. The vengeance of Kai Khosrau. Dire was the wailing among the army of Iran at their sore defeat, and they turned them back discomfited. And they came before the Shah, their hearts torn with anguish. And their hands were crossed upon their breasts, and they were humble as slaves. And Kai Khosrau was angry when he beheld them, and he remembered Firaud, and he railed against Tus, from whom was sprung this evil. And he said, cursed be he and his elephants and his cymbals. And the Shah withdrew from his courts, and he withheld his countenance from the land. So the nobles went out unto Rustam, and entreated of him that he would intercede for them with the Shah. And Rustam did as they desired, and he pleaded for the army and its leaders, and he spake good even of Tus. And Kai Khosrau inclined his ear unto his Pahlava, and he let the light of his countenance shine again upon his army, and he confided unto Tus once more the standard of Kawa, but he made Ju march beside him and restrain his haste. So they set forth again unto Turin, and Afrasiab, when he learned of their approach, made ready his army also. And there were joined unto him the hosts of the Khakan of China, and of the Khamis of Kishan, men mighty in the battlefield. And from Ind and all the highlands of Asia there came forth troops unto the aid of Afrasiab, king of Turin. And he rejoiced thereat, for he was assured that if Rustam came not forth to aid them, the men of Iran could not stand against his host. Now when the two armies met, many and fierce were the combats waged between them, and blows were given and received, and swords flashed and showers of arrows descended on all sides. And the blood of brave men was shed like unto the shedding of rain from a black cloud. And day by day were the Iranians weakened, for they were smitten with great slaughter, and the number of their dead was past the counting. But Afrasiab rejoiced in his victory, and his heart shouted within him when he learned after many days that the Iranians were drawn back into the mountains. But Kai Khosrau, when he learned it, was afflicted, and wept sore. Then he sent greeting unto Rustam, his Pahlava, and he craved of him that he would come forth to aid the army, for in him alone could he put his trust. And Rustam said, O Shah, since the day that mine arm could wield a mace, I have ever fought the battles of Iran, and it would seem that rest may never come nigh unto me. Yet since I am thy slave, it behoveth me to obey. I am ready to do thy desires. So he made ready an host to go unto the succor of Iran. And while he did so, the army was defeated yet again, and all heart went from the Iranians, and they would have given them over unto their foes. But while they pondered it, there came tidings unto Gudars that Rustam was drawing nigh. Yet they feared to give way unto belief. But Purin, when he heard it, was sore discomfited, for he remembered of old the might of Rustam, and he knew that none could stand before it. But the Khakan and the Khamis scoffed at his fears, and they made loud boastings that Rustam should fall by their hands. Now when some days had passed in this disquietude, it came about one night that, when the moon showed her face above the mountains, like unto a victorious king seated upon a throne of turquoise, a watchman of Iran set up a great cry. And he said, the plain is filled with dust, and the night resoundeth with noise. And I behold a mighty army drawing nigh, and they bear torches, and in their midst ride Rustam the mighty. When the men of Iran heard this, they set up a great shout, and their hearts seemed to come back into their bodies, and their courage, that had been as dead, returned. And glad was the greeting that they gave unto Rustam the Pahlava. And Rustam mustered them and put them into battle order, and when the sun had wearied of the black veil, and had torn the night asunder, and reappeared unto the world, the men of Iran called upon the host of Turin to come forth in combat. And they defied them unto battle, and they fought with new valor, and they made great havoc in their ranks. And when the evening was come, the day belonged unto Iran. Then Purin called before him Human the Brave, and said unto him, The nobles of Iran have found again their courage, since an army is come to their aid. Yet I would know if Rustam be their leader, for him alone do I fear. And when he learned it, his spirit was troubled. But the Khamis mocked him, and swore a great oath that, ere the sun should be set once more, he would have broken the might of Rustam. For he said, "There is none, not even a mad elephant, that is mine equal in the fight." So when the day was come, the Khamis challenged Rustam unto single combat. And Rustam strode forth from the camp, and the Khamis met him upon the plain. Then they struggled sore, and wrestled one with another, but in the end Rustam caught the Khamis in the meshes of his cord. And he showed him unto the army, and he asked of them, saying, "What death desire ye that the Khamis should die, for his hour is come?" Then he threw him among the nobles, and they made an end of him with their spears, and they flung his body to the vultures. Now when the Khokan heard of the death of the Khamis, he sware that he would avenge him, and he sent forth a messenger to defy Rustam. But Rustam said unto the messenger, "I seek no quarrel with the Khokan, and in all your army I desire only to look upon the face of Purin. And I beg of him that he will come forth to greet me, for my heart burneth towards him, because he was afflicted for the death of Siawash, my foster son, and because of the good he did unto Kai Khosrau and unto his mother." So the messenger bare these words unto Purin. And Purin, when he had taken counsel, listened unto the desires of Rustam, and came into his tents. And he said, "I am Purin, leader of the hosts of Turin. Speak unto me thy name." And Rustam said, "I am Rustam of Zabolistan, and I am armed with a mace and a sword of Kabul." Then he gave him greeting from Kai Khosrau, and he lauded him for the good deeds that he had done unto Siawash and to his son, and he entreated him that he would turn away from Afrasiab, and go with him unto Kai Khosrau. And he said, "Iran desireth not to destroy the innocent. Therefore deliver over unto me the men upon whose head resteth the blood of Siawash, and we will withdraw our hosts, and there shall be peace in the land." Then Purin said, "That which thou askest, verily it can never be, for the slayers of Siawash are near kinsfolk unto Afrasiab. And because he hath named me the leader of his hosts, it may not be that I abandon them. But I say unto thee, that it would be sweeter unto me to die than to conduct this warfare, and that my heart is torn because I must lift up the sword of enmity against Kai Khosrau, my son." And Rustam saw that the words that Purin spake were true, and he sorrowed for him. And when they parted it was in friendship, although they knew that battle must rage between them. Then they drew up their armies, and for 40 days there was waged a battle, mighty and terrible. And great ravages were committed, and Rustam did deeds of valor, and the strong and the weak were alike impotent before him. And the plains were strewn with the bodies of the slain, until that an ant could not have found a road to pass between them, and the blood of the wounded streamed on all sides, and heads without bodies and bodies without heads covered the ground. For neither the claw of the leopard nor the trunk of the elephant, neither the high mountains nor the waters of the earth, could prevail against Rustam when he fought at the head of his hosts. And he slew the mightiest among the Turanians, and only Purin was he mindful to spare. And the Khokan of China was enmeshed in his cord, and he sent him bound unto Kai Khosrau with news of the victory. And when the Turanians fled before his face, he followed after them and pursued them unto the mountains. Then Purin made haste to come before Afrasiab, and he spake to him and said, "The land is changed into a sea of blood, for Rustam is come forth, and who can stand against him? And he followeth after me close. Wherefore I counsel thee, flee, for how canst thou stand alone against him? Alas for the woe that thou hast brought upon Turin! Thou hast wounded our hearts with the iron of the arrow wherewith thou didst slay Siawash the noble." Then he urged upon him that he tarry not. So Afrasiab fled from before the face of Rustam and hid himself in the mountains. And when Rustam came into his courts and found that the king was fled, he seized upon much booty and divided it among his men, and he feasted them many days in the house of Afrasiab, and he suffered them to enjoy repose. Then he destroyed with fire the palace, and when he had done so he turned him to go back unto Kai Khosrau. Now when he was come within the city of the Shah, glad cries rang through all the air, and the sound of drums filled the land of Iran, and there was joy throughout its breadth because the destroyer of Turin was returned. And the heart of Kai Khosrau rejoiced like a paradise, and he came out to meet his Pahlava mounted upon an elephant gaily caparisoned, and music and singers went before him. And he invited him to a great feast, and he poured rich gifts upon him. And for a month Rustam abode in the presence of his Shah, making merry with wine. And the singers chanted of his great deeds, and the sounds of flutes and stringed instruments went with their words. But when that time was over, Rustam asked of Kai Khosrau that he would suffer him to return unto Zal his father, for his heart yearned to look upon his face. And Kai Khosrau suffered it. Now Rustam was not returned long unto Zabolistan before there came into the courts of the Shah a shepherd who desired to speak with Kai Khosrau. And the Shah granted his request, and the man opened his mouth before him, and he said, "A wild ass is broken in among my horses, and he doeth great mischief, for his breath is like unto a lion. Send forth, therefore, I entreat of thee, O King of Kings, a warrior of thine host that he may slay him." Now Kai Khosrau, when he had listened, knew that this was not a wild ass but the Devaquan, who had taken this disguise upon him. So he cast about whom he should send forth to meet him, and he knew there was none other but Rustam, the son of Zal, to whom he could turn in this strait. So he sent a messenger swift as a cloud before a storm to summon him forth yet again. And Rustam obeyed the voice of his Shah, and he set forth in search of the Dev, and he was mounted upon Rakush his steed. And in his hand was a mighty mace, and round his wrist was rolled a cord of length. And he went in search of the wild ass, and when he had found him he threw his cord about him. But the ass vanished under his hands. Then Rustam knew that it was a Dev, and that he fought against the arts of magic. Yet was he not dismayed. And after a while the ass came forth again, and Rustam threw his cord once more about him. And yet again the Dev vanished under his hand. And thus did the Dev 3 days and three nights without ceasing, so that weariness came upon Rustam and he was heavy with slumber. So he sought out a spot of safety and he laid him down to rest, and he bade Rakush browse beside him. Now when the Dev saw that Rustam was sleeping, he drew nigh and loosened the earth whereon he lay, and lifted it and placed it upon his head, that he might cast it away and destroy Rustam. But as he carried him Rustam awoke, and when he saw what was come to pass he feared that his hour was come. And the Dev, when he beheld that Rustam was awakened, spake and said unto him, "O hero, which death dost thou covet? Shall I fling thee down upon the mountain or cast thee into the sea?" Now Rustam knew that the Dev questioned him in wile, and he bethought him that he would of a surety do that which Rustam desired not, so he said, "I have heard it said that it is not given to those that perish in the waters to look upon the face of the Serosk or to find rest in the life that is beyond." Then the Dev said, "I desire that thou know not repose." And he flung him into the sea at a spot where hungry crocodiles would devour him. Now Rustam, when he felt the water beneath him, forthwith drew out his sword and combated the crocodiles with his right hand, and with his left he swam towards the shore. And long did he struggle and soar, but when the night was fallen he put his foot upon the dry land. Then, when he had given thanks unto God and rested him, he returned unto the spot where he had found the Dev. And he sought after Rakush his steed, and his eye beheld him not. Then fear filled his spirit, and he roamed around to seek him. And he found him at last among the horses of Afrasiab, that grazed in a spot hard by, for the keepers had ensnared him. But when Rakush heard the voice of Rustam he neighed aloud, and brake from the keepers and ran towards his master. And Rustam put the saddle upon him and mounted him. Then he slew the keepers and took their herds unto himself. Now while he was so doing Afrasiab came forth from his hiding place, for his heart yearned to look upon his horses. And when he beheld Rustam in their midst he was dismayed, and knew not whither he should turn, for he deemed that the Pahlava had discovered his hiding place and was come forth against him. So he offered battle unto him with the men that were with him. And Rustam accepted the challenge, although he was alone, And he fought with might and overcame the men, and slew 60 of them with his sword and 40 with his mace. And Aphrasiab fled once more from before him. Now when it was done, the Deev came forth again, for he thought he could quell Rustam now that he was weary. But Rustam sprang on him and crushed him, and he was slain at his hands. Then the Pahlava returned unto Kai Khosrau. And when the Shah had learned of all his deeds, and beheld the booty that he had brought back, his mouth could not cease from praising the prowess of Rustam, and he would have kept his Pahlava beside him forever. But Rustam said, "Suffer thy servant to go forth. For I would make ready an host, since it behoveth us not to cease from the vengeance that is due unto Siawash, for his murderers yet cumber the ground." Wherefore Rustam departed yet again from out the courts of the Shah. Bizun and Manajay. Peace reigned again within the borders of Iran, and P. the Sword slept in its scabbard, and Kai Khosrau ordered the world with wisdom. And men rejoiced that the glory of Turan had been brought low, and the Shah feasted his nobles in lightness of heart. Now it came about one day that while they were shortening the hours with wine, there entered in unto them the keeper of the curtains of the door. And he said that men from Armen stood without and craved an audience. Then Kai Khosrau bade that they be let in. So the men came before him, and they uttered cries of lamentation, and they fell down at his feet and implored his aid. And Kai Khosrau said, "Who hath done you wrong?" Then the men answered, "Our wrong cometh unto us from the borders of Turin, for there issue forth thence wild boars that break into our fields and do destruction to our crops. And our fortunes are entwined with the ground, and no man can overcome these beasts. Wherefore, we pray thee, send forth a Pahlava that he may subdue them, for our land groaneth under this plague." Then Kai Khosrau said, "It shall be done as you desire," and he dismissed them graciously. Then he called before him his treasurer, and bade him bring forth precious stones, and horses with girdles of gold, and rich brocades of rhum. And when they were placed before him, he showed them to his nobles, and he said that whoever would go forth to combat the wild boars should not find him close-handed. But for a while none answered, for no man listed to go forth to battle with wild beasts. Then Bizun, the son of Ju, arose and spake, saying, "If the Shah will grant leave unto me, I will go forth and slay these foes." Now Ju was grieved thereat, because that Bizun was his only son, and he feared for his youth. Therefore he sought to restrain him. But Bizun suffered it not, and he said, "O king, listen unto my desires, for though I be young in years, yet am I old in prudence, and I will do naught that is not fitting unto thy slave." And Kai Khosrau granted his request, but he bade him take forth with him Gurjan, the wise in counsel, that he should guide him aright. And Bizun did as the Shah desired, and they set forth unto the land of Armen. Now when they were come unto the wood, they rested them, and made a great fire, and drank wine until they were refreshed. Then Gurjan would have laid him down to slumber. But Bizun said, "Not so, let us go forth and seek the wild boars." Then Gurjan said, "Go thou alone, for it is thou who hast engaged in this combat, and who hast taken to thyself the gifts of the Shah. Therefore it behoveth me only to look on." When Bizun heard these words, he was amazed, but he regarded them not, and he entered in upon the forest. And after a while he came upon the wild boars, and they fell upon him. But he slew them with his mace, and he reddened the ground with their gore, and he went after them, even unto their lairs, and not one of them did he suffer to escape. Then when he had done thus, he parted their mighty teeth from off their heads and hung them about his saddle, that the men of Iran might behold them. And after this he turned him back unto Gurjan. Now Gurjan, when he beheld him mounted upon his horse, and bearing round his saddle the tokens of his triumph, was envious thereat. And with his mouth he gave him joy, but Ahriman took hold of his spirit. So he pondered all night long how he could lay a snare for Bizun. And when the morning was come, he praised his prowess, and they quaffed wine together, and fair words were exchanged between them. Then Gurjan said, "This land is known unto me, for I sojourned here with Rustam. And I know that at the distance of 2 farsangs lies the garden of Afrasiab, where his women go forth to keep the feast of spring. And I bethink me that the time is at hand. Wherefore, I say unto thee, let us go hence, and behold with our eyes the fair ones whom the king of Turin hideth behind his curtains. Now these words inflamed the blood of Bazan, and he gave ear unto Gurgin, for he was young, and he acted like a young man. So they set forth upon the road, and Gurgin filled the mind of Bazan with feasts and with sounds of music. And when they were come unto the spot, Bazan burned with impatience to look upon the women of Afrasiab. And Gurgin feigned as though he would restrain his foot within the skirt of patience, but he rejoiced in secret, for he hoped that from this deed evil would arise. So Bazan sped forth unto the garden, and he hid himself beneath the shade of a tall cypress, and he feasted his eyes upon the beauty of the women. And the garden was clad in its robes of spring, and the world was green and fair, and all the air was filled with the sweet sounds of music and of song. And there moved amid the rose bushes maidens of peri face, and in stature they were like to the cypress trees, and one was exalted above them all. And she was daughter unto Afrasiab, and Manajay was she named. Now it came about that as Manajay stood at the door of her tent she beheld Bazan where he was hid. And she marveled at his beauty, and her heart was captive unto him. So she called about her maidens, and said, go forth and question the stranger who regardeth us, for I bethink me that he is a peri, or that Siawish is come back unto the earth, for no mortal can own such beauty, neither can any man enter here. Then one went forth and bare unto Bazan this message. And his heart leaped thereat, and he said, say unto your mistress that I am come forth from Iran to slay the wild boars of Arman. And I came hither that perchance I might gaze upon the face of the daughter of Afrasiab, for tidings of her beauty were told unto me, and reached even unto Iran. Go, therefore, and ask if I may speak with her. Then the handmaidens did as Bazan desired, and Manajay said, let him come forth. So Bazan entered into the tents of Manajay, and she received him with joy, and she caused his feet to be washed with musk and amber, and she poured jewels before him, and prepared for him a feast of sweetmeats. And slaves stood around and made soft music, and the heart of Bazan was ensnared in the meshes of the net that had been spread. And 3 days and 3 nights did he sojourn beside Manajay, and his passion for her waxed greater, and he thought not of Iran, neither of the time of departure. And Manajay too rejoiced in his presence, and when the time was come for her to quit the garden of spring she would not part with him. So she gave unto him a cup wherein she had mingled a potion. And the wine caused Bazan to sleep, and while he slept the maidens bare him in a litter even into the house of Afrasiab. And Manajay hid him behind the curtains of the women, and none, save only her handmaidens, were aware of his presence. Now when Bazan awoke he asked whither he was come, and when he learned that he was in the house of Afrasiab he was afraid, and desired to return unto Iran. But Manajay quieted his distrust, and he forgot his fears in her love. And she made the earth glad about him, and the hours fled on the wings of wine and of joy. And many days sped thus, and none knew what passed in the house of the women. Then it came about that a guardian of the door learned thereof, and he came before Afrasiab, and told unto him that his daughter hid within her house a man of the race of Iran. And Afrasiab, when he learned it, was beside himself with anger, and he cursed Manajay, and he said, the hour is come unto this man. Then he called for Jersuaz, his brother, and bade him go forth with a band of armed men unto the house of the women. And Jersuaz did as Afrasiab commanded, and he put guards at all the doors. Then the sounds of lutes and of rejoicing fell upon his ear, for none were aware of the vengeance that was come upon them. And when Jersuaz was come unto the house of Manajay, the daughter of Afrasiab, he brake open the doors, and stood in the midst of the revels. And he beheld within the chamber many slaves playing on lutes of gold, and fair women that handed the wine cups. And Manajay was seated upon a throne of gold, and beside her was Bazan, the son of Jug, the Iranian, and joy was painted on his visage. Now when Jersuaz beheld Bazan, he cried, O vile man, Thou art fallen into my hands. How wilt thou now save thy life? And Bazan was dismayed, for he had neither sword nor armor, and he thought within himself, I fear me that my life will end this day. But he drew forth from his boot a dagger that was hidden therein, and he threatened Jersuaz, and he said that he would plunge it into his breast if he led him not before Afrasiab. Now Jersuaz knew that Bazan was quick to act, and would do that which he spake, so he held back from combat, and he seized Bazan and bound him, and led him before Afrasiab. And when Afrasiab saw him in such plight, he said, O man of evil, wherefore didst thou come into my land? Then Bazan told him how he was gone forth to slay the boars, and how he was come into the garden of Afrasiab, and he said that a peri had borne him unto the palace, for he would not do hurt unto Manajay. But Afrasiab refused belief unto his words, and he commanded that a gibbet should be raised without his court, and that Bazan be hung thereon, because he had dishonored the house of the women, and had stolen like a thief in the night into the house of the king. And in vain did Bazan invoke mercy at the hands of Afrasiab, and he was led forth beyond the courts. And the men of Afrasiab made ready the gallows, and Bazan stood bound beneath. And he wept sore in his distress, and he prayed to the wines that they would bear tidings of him unto the Shah of Iran, and he sware that his death should be avenged upon Turin. Now while he waited thus there passed by Perin, the Pahlava, who was come forth to do homage unto the king. And when he beheld the gibbet he questioned concerning it, and when he learned that it was for Bazan he was troubled. So he got him from his horse and came near unto the youth, and questioned him of this adventure. And Bazan told him all that was come about, and how his evil comrade had laid for him a snare. Then Perin commanded that punishment be stayed until he should have spoken unto Afrasiab. And he went in and stood before the king as a suppliant. Then Afrasiab bade him make known his desires. And Perin opened his mouth and spake words of wisdom unto Afrasiab, his king. And he reminded him of the death of Siawash, and how Bazan was of much account in his own country, and how surely his blood would be avenged. And he said how the land of Turin was not ready to stand again in a new war, and he prayed Afrasiab to content him with a dungeon. And he said, Heap chains upon Bazan, and let the earth hide him, that Iran may not know whither he is vanished. Now Afrasiab knew that the words of Perin were wise, and he gave ear unto them. So Bazan was led forth unto a desert place and he was laden with chains of iron and his tender flesh was bound and he was thrown into a deep hole. And the opening thereof was closed with a mighty stone that the Devaquan had torn from the nethermost sea, and neither sun nor moon could be seen by Bazan, and Afrasiab trusted that his reason would forsake him in this pit. And when he had done thus unto Bazan, he bade Jersuaz go in unto the house of the daughter that had dishonored him, and tear off her costly robes, and her crown, and her veil. And he said, Let her be cast forth also into the desert, that she may behold the dungeon wherein Bazan is hid. And say unto her, Thou hast been his spring, be now his comforter, and wait upon him in his narrow prison. And Jersuaz did as Afrasiab commanded, and he tore the veil from off Manajay, and he caused her to walk barefooted unto the spot where Bazan was hid. Now Manajay was bowed down with sorrow, and she wept sore, and she wandered through the desert day and night bewailing her fate. And ever did she return unto the pit, and she sought how she might enter therein. But she could not move the mighty stone that closed its mouth. Yet after some days were gone by she found an opening where she could thrust in her hand. Now when she had found it she rejoiced, and daily she went forth unto the city and begged of men that they would give her bread. And none knew her for the daughter of Afrasiab, but all had pity upon her sorry plight, and they gave her freely of that which they had. And she returned with it unto Bazan, and she fed him through the hole that she had made. And she spake unto him sweet words of comfort, and she kept his heart alive within him. Now while these things were passing in Turin, Gurjan was returned unto Iran much discomfited. And he pondered how he should come before the Shah, and what he should say unto Jug. And he told them that they had of their combined strength overcome the boars, and he boasted that he had done deeds of great prowess, And he said that a wild ass was come forth out of the forest and had borne away Bazan from before his eyes, and verily he held that it must be a div. Then Kai Khosrau questioned him closely, and when he had done so he saw that Gurjan held not unto his story. So his mind misgave him, and he commanded that Gurjan be put in chains. And he said, I will guard thee until I have learned tidings of Bazan. Now Jo was beside himself with grief because of his only son, whom he loved, but Kai Khosrau spake comfort unto his soul. And he bade riders go forth unto all corners of the wind to seek tidings of Bazan, and he said, If I learn not concerning him until the feast of Nuruz be come, I will search for him in the crystal globe wherein I can behold the world, and read the secrets of destiny. Now when the horsemen had sought Bazan in vain throughout the plains of Iran and in the gorges of the land of Arman, they returned them unto the courts of the Shah. So when the feast of Nuruz was come, Kai Khosrau clothed himself in a robe of Ru'm, and he took from off his head the crown of the Kayanides, and he presented himself in humility before Ormuzd. Then he took in his hand the globe of crystal, and he prayed to God that he would grant unto him to behold the seven zones of the world. And God granted it. And Kai Khosrau surveyed all the lands of the earth, and nowhere upon them could he behold Bazan. And he was downcast and sad in his spirit, for he deemed that Bazan was departed from the world. Then Ormuzd showed unto him where he was hidden in a pit, and Kai Khosrau beheld him, and the damsel that watched beside him. So he called before him Ju, and said, Let thy heart cease from sorrow, for thy son liveth, and he is tended by a maiden of noble birth. But he is bound, and a mighty stone is laid above his prison, and Rustam alone can deliver him. Wherefore I counsel thee, speed forth unto Zabolistan and entreat the son of Zul that he come unto our aid yet again. Then Kai Khosrau wrote a letter unto Rustam, wherein he told him all that was come about, and he gave the writing unto Ju. And Ju sped forth therewith unto Zabolistan. Now when he was come within the courts of Rustam, Zul beheld him from afar, and he feared that evil was come upon Iran since the Shah sent forth a man of might like unto Ju to be his messenger. So he came forth in haste and questioned him. And when he learned his mission he bade him come within, and he told him how Rustam was gone forth to chase the wild ass, and he made a feast for him, and entertained him until his son was returned within the courts. Now when Rustam learned the tidings, his eyes were filled with tears, but he spake comfort unto Ju, and he said, Be not disquieted, for verily Rustam shall not remove the saddle from Rakush until he hath grasped the hand of Bazan, and broken his chains and his prison. And when he had read the letter of the Shah, he made him ready to go, before Kai Khosrau. And when he was come into his presence, he did obeisance before him, and he said, O King of Kings, I am ready to do thy commandments, for my mother brought me into the world that I might weary myself for thee, and unto thee pertaineth rest and joy, and unto me combat everlasting. Then he chose forth from among the warriors men of renown, that they should go out with him to deliver Bazan. And Gurjan sent greeting unto Rustam, and craved of him that he would plead for him with the Shah. And he bewailed his fault, and he entreated that he might go out to succor Bazan. And Rustam asked his forgiveness of Kai Khosrau, and when the Shah would have refused his suit, he pressed him hard. So Kai Khosrau listened to the desires of his Pahlava. Then he said unto him, Tell me what men and treasures thou desirest to bear with thee into Turan. And Rustam said, I desire not a large army, for I think to regain Bazan by the arts of wile. Give unto me, therefore, jewels and rich brocades, and carpets, and stuffs of value, for I purpose to go forth in the garb of a merchant. Then Kai Khosrau gave him the key to all his treasures, and Rustam chose forth rich stuffs, and loaded them upon 100 camels. And he desired 7 valiant knights that they should go forth with him clad in the dress of merchants, and that an army be posted in secret upon the borders. And when all was ready the caravan went forth. And they journeyed until they came into the town of Khotan, and all the people came forth to gaze upon their merchandise. Then Rustam, in his disguise, went unto the house of Purin, and he poured gifts before him, and he asked leave of him that he might remain within the borders to sell his wares. and Purin granted his request. So Rustam took for himself a house, and showed his goods unto the people, and bartered them, and it was noised through all the land that a caravan was come out from Iran, and all who had need of aught flocked into the city. And the news spread even unto the ears of Manajay. And when she learned that it was men of Iran who were come forth, she made her way unto the city, and came before Rustam and questioned him, saying, "What news is there abroad in Iran concerning Bazan, the son of Ju, and doth no army come forth to save him? O noble merchant, I entreat of thee when thou goest back to thy land, to seek out Ju, and Kai Khosrau, and Rustam the Mighty, and bring unto them tidings of Bazan, lest he perish in his chains." Now Rustam, when he heard her words, was afraid for his secret, for he knew not who she was. Wherefore he spoke roughly unto her, and he said, "I am a man of peace and of ignoble birth, a merchant, and I know not of Ju, or of Bazan, or of the Shah. Get thee hence, maiden, thou dost but hinder my business, and this alone concerneth me." When he had thus spoken, Manajay looked on him with sorrow, and wept, saying, "Do the men of Iran refuse tidings unto the poor?" Then Rustam repented him of his harshness, and said, "Woman, who art thou, and how do these things regard thee?" And he caused food to be put before her, and he comforted her with kind words. Then Manajay said, "I am daughter unto Afrasiyab, and my father hath cast me forth because of Bazan." And she told him all that was come about, and how she had tended her beloved, and how she had kept him alive. And she related unto Rustam how he languished in his chains, and how they put their trust alone in Rustam the Pahlava. And she said, "When it was told unto me that men from Iran were come forth, I sped hither unto thee, for I hoped that tidings of Bazan might come thus unto the mighty warrior." When Rustam heard her words he was moved with compassion. And when he had spoken softly unto her, he gave to her savory meats, and he bade her bear them unto Bazan. Now within the body of a fowl he had hidden a ring whereon was graven his seal. And when Bazan came upon it, and felt the ring, and that it bare the name of Rustam, his heart laughed within him, for he knew that the end of his ills was come. And his lips laughed also, and his laughter shook the walls of the pit. Now when Manajay heard his laughter she was amazed, and she feared lest his wits were distraught, and she leaned over the mouth of the pit and spake, saying, "O man of ill fortune, wherefore is thy heart thus light, thou who seest neither sun, nor moon, nor stars?" Then Bazan answered and said, "Hope is sprung up in my breast." And Manajay said, "Whence dost thou behold the rays of hope?" And Bazan answered, "I know not whether I can confide it unto thee, for a woman cannot keep a secret." Now Manajay was pained at these words, and she upbraided Bazan, and recalled to him all she had suffered for his sake. And Bazan repented him of his hasty speech, for he knew that she was prudent and strong of spirit. So he said, "Swear unto me a great oath, and I will tell it unto thee." And Manajay swore. Then Bazan said, "I know that the merchant who is come forth from Iran is come out because of me. Go therefore again into his presence, and say unto him, O Pahlava of the King of Kings, tell unto me, art thou the master of Rakhuj?" Now Manajay, when she had heard these words, sped forth to do the bidding of Bazan. And she came before Rustam, and spake to him the words that had been told her. And he answered and said, "Go say unto thy friend, verily I am the master of Rakhuj, and that I am come forth to deliver him." Then he bade her gather together wood into a pyre, and set light thereto when the night should be come, that he might know where Bazan was laid. And Manajay did as Rustam commanded, and she wearied not to scour the land, and she stripped the trees of their branches, and her tender body was torn of thorns, but she bare all gladly for the sake of Bazan, whom she loved. And when the night was fallen she set light unto the wood, and Rustam came forth unto the spot, and his seven comrades came with him. And each strove in turn to lift the stone that closed the pit, but none could roll it aside. Then Rustam prayed to God that he would grant him strength, and he came unto the mouth of the pit, and he bent down his body, And he spake unto Bazan, and questioned him how he was come into these straits. Then he said, I would ask of thee a boon. Grant thy forgiveness unto Gurjan, if it be given unto me to move this stone, and to free thee from out of this pit. For verily he repenteth him of his evil deed, and because he is valiant I would that there should be peace between you. But Bazan said, Thou knowest not all the evil that Gurjan hath brought upon me. I cannot give ear unto thy request, for I desire to take vengeance upon him. Then Rustam said, If thy mind be thus evil that thou wilt not listen to my desires, nor remember how I am come forth in friendship to succor thee, I shall mount upon Rakush and leave thee to perish in thy chains. When Bazan heard these words he gave a loud cry, and bewailed his evil plight. And he said, Be it as thou desirest. Then Rustam laid hold of the stone, and he put forth all his strength, and he lifted it from off the mouth of the pit and threw it far into the desert. Then he let down his cord and enmeshed Bazan therein, and drew him forth from his dungeon. And he was a sorry sight to see, for the earth had withered his body, and his skin hung about his bones. Now Rustam, when he had broken the chains of Bazan, covered him with a cloak and set him upon a horse, and he took Manajay also, and led them unto his house in the city. Then when he had refreshed them with water, and covered them with new robes, he desired that they be led unto the spot where the army was hidden. And he said unto Bazan, I desire to fall upon Turin, but thou art too wasted to fight. But Bazan said, Not so, let Manajay go forth into shelter, but it behoveth not a man to be guarded like a woman. And he refused ear to the desires of Rustam, and he clad him in a coat of mail, and he girded him to ride beside the pale of And they went forth in the darkness until they were come unto the house of Afrasiab. And when they were come there, Rustam lifted the doors from off their hinges and entered into the precincts, and he slew the guards that kept the curtains, and he made him a passage unto the chamber of Afrasiab. And when he stood therein he lifted up his voice of thunder, and he cried, Sleep, man of folly, and may thy slumbers be deep. Thou hast rested upon thy throne while Bazan was hidden in a pit. But thou hast forgotten that a road ledeth from Iran into Turin, and thou didst think in thine evil heart that none would come forth to avenge him. Listen, therefore, unto my voice, for I am Rustam, the son of Zal, the Pahlava, and I have broken down thy doors, and released Bazan from his chains, and I am come to do vengeance upon thee. When Afrasiab heard these words he awoke, and cried out in his fear. And he called upon the names of his guards. But no man came forth, because they had been laid low by the hands of Rustam. Then Afrasiab made his way unto the door, and because it was dark he escaped thence, and he fled before the face of Rustam, and left his house between his hands. Then Rustam took much rich booty of slaves, and horses, and jewels, and when he had done so he sped back unto his army, for he knew that with the day Afrasiab would come forth with an host to assail him. And it came about as he foresaw, and when the day was risen the watchers cried out that an army marched forth from Turin. Then Rustam set his men in battle order, and he sent Manajay and the slaves and the booty into Iran, and he placed himself at the head of the host, and Bazan rode beside him. And there was fought a mighty battle, and great was the slaughter, and the bodies of the slain and the broken armor covered the earth. And the banner of Turin sank, and Afrasiab fled before his enemies. Then Rustam returned with joy unto Kaikhosrau, and the Shah was glad also. And he came forth to greet his Pahlava, and there rode with him Ju and Gudars, his warriors. And when Kaikhosrau saw Rustam he embraced him, and said, O stay of my soul, and man of valor, thou resemblest the sun, for wheresoever men may look they behold the traces of thy mighty deeds. Happy is Zal who owneth a son such as thou. Then he blessed him, and showered rich gifts upon him, and Jud blessed him also, and Gudars, because he had brought back Bazan into their midst. Then Kaikhosrau gave orders that a great feast be prepared, and the heroes drank until their heads were heavy with wine. But in the morning Rustam came before the Shah in audience, and opened his mouth and said, May it please the king to lend his ear unto his slave. I desire to return unto Zal, my father. And Kaikhosrau listened to the just desires of Rustam, though he would fain have kept him in his courts. Now when Rustam was departed, Kaikhosrau called before him Bazan, and he spake to him of that which was come about, and he poured pity upon the daughter of Afrasiab when he learned all she had suffered for the sake of Bazan, and he gave him rich gifts, and bade him bear them unto her, and he said, cherish this woman in thy bosom, and suffer not that grief come nigh unto her, neither speak to her cold words, for she hath endured much for thee. And may thy life beside her be happy. And when the Shah had thus spoken, he dismissed Bazan from his presence. Thus endeth the history of Bazan and Manajeh.